You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the players who play them. My name is Iran Aviram.
My name is Uri Lifshitz.
And today we'll discuss how mundane and boring your next character should be.
An accountant, I tell you.
Well, not actually boring, of course. No one wants to play a boring character. But mundane is actually something that we should discuss. We would like to present several suggestions for character concept that might be different from your usual tropes. We are assuming you are playing some fantasy or sci-fi game and not one of the games that we will discuss later on, which are all about being mundane. And we hope that this list will inspire you to make more interesting choices and have characters that, by their very definition, create some interesting conflicts and drama in the game.
There are already many fine suggestions on how to improve your character's background and choice. You can check out some of our past episode, episode 2, how to avoid character cliches and create a more interesting character, or episode 58, if you just want to have a better background for your character.
Uri, you sound a bit different today. Is everything okay?
Yeah, sorry, I'm a bit under the weather at the moment. It's those damn exchange of seasons, you know, right between the season change, I always get this. It's a flaw that my player decided to take in order to make gameplay more interesting, and I sincerely hate him for that.
Sure. So let's begin.
So let's start off with the family man. We suggest that you play an adult character that has a family. And by have a family, I don't mean a mother and father, aunts, etc. I mean a character that has a wife or a husband. Probably have kids. Now, in many games, having a family is a simple liability. Is something for the GM to decide to prey upon when they run out of game idea or adventure ideas. But I would argue that simply having a family, in a positive way that manifests itself during the game, would make your character a lot more interesting and possibly make them face new challenges, like if they're being seduced by one of the evil henchmen of the evil overlord. And now they have to decide between staying on their role as a spy or cheating on their family, for example.
Mm.
This is a very interesting moral dilemma that you will, in most time, would not see in a regular gameplay.
Many players avoid having any family ties, usually even father and mother, they just get eaten by wolves or something, because they want to avoid any connections, anything that will pin them down. However, connections are what makes drama. Connections create conflict. Connections are the basis upon which cool things can happen. So one should, I think, generally speaking, default to having a family and not actually against having a family because it's just such a rich ground for cool things to happen.
Indeed. Our next suggestion is to have an unrelated history. Play a character that already had a profession or an occupation in their life, but that profession or occupation has nothing to do with their current profession as an adventurer, or class, if you will. One example would be that in every Dungeon and Dragon or Pathfinder game I played, I would always pick one unrelated skill and add that to my character. My current character, Krieger von Messer, is a swashbuckler. He's a warlord. He has been practicing his whole life to wield a sword. But he also loves fashion, and he loves making his own costumes. And I gave him ranks in profession clothmaking. And that actually came in handy several times during the campaign, because I have an amazing GM, and an amazing GM catches what interests their players and put it into the adventure. So when we fought this specific villain one time, he told me, okay, roll cloth making, and you notice that their clothes are a fake version of the town guards, etc., etc. So always add that unrelated element that would make your character more interesting, because your character is not the simple class and skills, but a whole backstory woven into it.
I think that here we suggest taking it even a step further than just having an interesting hobby. We are saying something along the lines of, what if your character was an accountant before they became a, for example, fighter? So, first of all, it would explain why they are so bad at fighting at level one, because they were an accountant. But it can also provide some cool RP moments, like, for example, when the accountant doesn't really know how to handle these goblins. I mean, they are swarming him, and he looks at them and fixes the glasses on his face and tries to swing his sword around. And, I mean, technically he's a fighter. He will probably be able to bash a few heads, but he is kind of terrified and probably will try to talk to them, and probably by mumbling or something. And afterward, he will probably be very careful about counting the number of coins that they had on them. And that's because you're not playing a fighter. You're not defined by just your class. You are defined by what you were before that. And that's kind of awesome.
I would give a shout out to a series of books by Drew Hayes, because I love him. He has a book called The Utterly Uninteresting and Unadventurous Tales of Fred, the Vampire Accountant. And these are the tales, as you can imagine, of an accountant named Fred who gets bitten and turned into a vampire, and he has no idea of what to do as a vampire. However, he learns, and the whole process of learning how to use and deal with his power and this, the whole supernatural world, is very, very interesting. And this is a perfect example of how you can take a very mediocre, non-heroic character and showcase a very interesting story based on their attempt to overcome their history and turn into what they will be.
Excellent.
Another interesting character to play would be the young apprentice. And I don't mean the young apprentice as in, oh, my young apprentice, go forth and be a Jedi. I mean, literally, the young apprentice. The apprentice who doesn't really know how to use some of their powers. And that is very different in my mind from a novice wizard. I mean, the novice wizard might have two spells and they feel very, very confident about using them. The young apprentice has two spells and they're not sure what the second one does. It's a whole new attitude to, I'm not on my way to glory, I'm on my way to becoming a novice wizard. So it's a different mindset more than anything else that allow you to play your character in a forward-looking, future-imagining, wide-eye kind of way.
It also really enhances your ability to fail. It really legitimizes your failures. And I think as a player, that's a great thing, a great skill for you to train. Failing and having fun with failing. Because most systems of this kind do not reward failure. They only reward success. You must defeat the monsters. In order to do that, you must be good at fighting or at casting spells, etc. And that's fine. You can still be technically good at these things, but maybe not good at using them. Or maybe you can be good at these things, but not good at the peripheral of your class. Like, for example, stuff like knowing things about arcane monsters. As a wizard, I have a high arcane skill. I can roll it and know things about arcane. Oh, wait, I don't have a high arcane skill. I'm not even proficient with arcane. I'm a rubbish wizard. I'm just a young apprentice trying to become the novice. I still have so much to learn. And that can be a lot of fun. Because, as we said before, that doesn't mean you're not good at things. You might just not be good at the expected things yet.
A step up from the young apprentice, we have the mid-range minion. In this suggestion, we have your character as a part of an organization, but not anywhere near the top. And your character desperately want to climb up that ladder. They definitely want to be at the top of their organization. But deep down in their heart of hearts, they know it's damn near impossible unless they distinguish themselves in some amazing way. So they go on adventures and they do whatever they do with the sole purpose of not getting the gold, not defeating the monsters, but simply to gain the appreciation of their masters. But notice this, depending on that organization, what they need to do in order to distinguish themselves might vary greatly. If this is a paladin, a mid-range minion paladin who wants to become a leader of a specific army unit or whatever paladins do, I don't know.
They have orders. Let's say they have an order.
Yeah, they want to become a head of a specific order inside their whatever, inside their church. So they would be more concerned with doing good and doing the right thing and getting credit for it than defeating monsters or whatever. And if they're a thief, maybe they just want a lot of money, but they don't really need the money. They just want people talking about that amazing heist that they did. So they would join an adventuring party and they would say, okay, I know I deserve 1/5 of the treasure. I'm fine with, you know, giving me 1/10 of the treasure, but let's go and steal from someone more famous.
Yes.
Okay, I don't care about the gold. I just need people to know that I'm an amazing thief. That's all. And you can go on and on with this. If this is an order dedicated to protecting widows and orphans, your character might prefer to go and hunt down the 3 goblins who are harassing the orphanage than to kill the dragon who's threatening the next town. Make for very interesting game choices.
Do note that a dragon threatening a town might result in having some new orphans. And, I mean, technically that's not a good thing, but if your order needs some budget, then proving that there's a need for more money by showing all of these new orphans, I mean, that can technically work. And it's for the greater good.
The greater good. Next up on the agenda is the dark past. The villainous past, if you will. Maybe your character was once on the wrong side of the law, of the moral compass of the universe. Maybe they were criminals. Maybe they were terrorists. Maybe they were evil cultist. However, for some reason, they have seen the errors of their ways and they have switched sides. And these characters are very interesting, either because there's no zealot like a convert, and they are dying to show that now they're on the good side.
Yes, to prove that everything is fine with them now and that they really and actually do want good.
Yeah, maybe they need to prove it to someone, like they're on probation. And maybe they just need to prove it to themselves. God damn it, I'm not that monster as I used to be.
I can see myself finally as beautiful on the inside.
Definitely. I actually plan on turning one of my current characters into this theme once I get a hold of my GM and ask for permission. But if we have covered so much ground, why not go and start off as a very, very famous person, which our next suggestion is. Now, many of the characters we tend to play start off as nobodies and slowly gain fame and fortune. But why not start off at the top? Your character might be a legendary hero traveling in disguise, or you know what? Not traveling in disguise. As the great Tony Stark once said, ah, fuck it, I'm Iron Man. Be a third level fighter who simply done something amazing in his past. You have single-handedly rushed forward and stopped an assassination from the king. it didn't take a lot of skill. You just read forward and the poisonous blade got into you instead of the king. You are a legend. You're not that good, maybe, but you're still a legend. And everyone knows you. And in every tavern, you get free drinks. However, there is still work to be done. And being famous put a lot of strain on actually doing that job. It's not all fun and games. It would greatly hinder your ability to infiltrate or to go unnoticed or to simply move fast because everywhere you go, everyone wants to sit down and talk to you.
Our next suggestion is playing someone who is a something, a creation of or somehow related to someone or something else in the campaign. Like, for example, let's say that the wizard tried to create an uber familiar, not just a familiar, but something bigger and greater and grander, and the result is your player character. So that, of course, requires two characters. So that, of course, requires two players to decide on this together, to play this, because this requires some deep connection between the two. Maybe
you can be a creation of an NPC, I think.
You can be
still
a creation.
Still interesting.
It's interesting, but I think that it really calls to the Pinocchio sort of play, where I don't know anything about the world, I need to learn. But that might be fun, but I would like to again focus on interesting connections, and I think that by having this deep connection with someone else in the party, and raising all of this question of, wait, so I am my own thinking being now, I'm literally being played by a player. And we have decided in-game, the familiar and the wizard, that he's not actually your familiar anymore. We are actually two different beings working together, but I still owe you so much. You created me. I still probably, at least emotionally, still depended on you. Maybe we spent a lot of time together. Maybe you were the only person I spent time with for years. And now, whenever I'm faced with a problem, I might ask you, first of all, how would you solve this? And only then maybe start to realize that I have different opinions. There's a lot that can arise from this connection. And again, it doesn't require you to be anything else class-wise. You can be whatever class you want. You can even be whatever race you want. Because we can...
Because Frankenstein.
Sure, yeah, that works. But also because we can color it however we would like. I mean, if you want to be, for example... a cat familiar that was infused with an unnatural power and became a man-like familiar, then you can play a tabaxi, which is just a cat person. And there could be other tabaxis in the world. They might not be the same thing that you are, but rules-wise, you're a tabaxi and you use the rules for a tabaxi. And so you can still play your tabaxi rogue, just explaining their origin and what they were before and how that influences their game currently in a very different way than just saying, well, I'm from a faraway land and I have no connections to anything and I can just run around and steal stuff.
Now I'm dying to see a campaign where this old wizard is sending some people on a quest and those people are his apprentice, his eagle, which is a mid-range minion, and his intelligent golem together as a party, and they're all, you know, vying for his attention and appreciation, but have to work together in order to get over their adversaries.
Sounds pretty cool. My next suggestion is built on your mid-range minion suggestion from before, Uri, and it's to play someone who is defined by what they desire, not what they can do. A lot of the time when we introduce our characters, we say, yes, I'm a paladin, I'm a cleric of, I'm a barbarian, and classes are usually just a collection of abilities, what we can do. But being defined by my desire to rise above the mid-management of my organization, or being defined by my desire to be, for example, not a fighter, but a freedom fighter, I want to free this city from its demonic tyrant. The fact that I'm a wizard is not the relevant thing here. And it's not relevant to me, the character. I don't care as the character that I'm a wizard. I became a wizard in order to be a better freedom fighter. But when I introduce myself, I would introduce myself as probably a rebel. not an arcane magister of whatevers, because it's just a tool in my understanding of myself. My abilities are just tools. What I desire, what I want to achieve, is how I define myself, and that makes for a more interesting interaction as a player than just saying, yes, I'm a wizard. Sure, but what does that mean? My next suggestion is for someone who appears to be playing but has a secret inner world. And the best example for this is a Netflix show called Agretzko, in which we see a mild-mannered 25-something Japanese worker in a very...
Office worker,
yes. In a very... We don't even know what her company is all about. And she's an accountant there. That's the only thing that we know. And in the evenings, when the pressure from the day accumulates into such a powder keg waiting to explode, she goes into a karaoke place and shouts heavy metal into her microphone because she is a metalhead, a huge metalhead, and she's great at it. She's a great singer, but she only does it for herself. And of course, the interesting thing is when other people start to discover this, and when she starts to maybe allow more of her inner secret world into the regular world. There's a conflict here between what you would like to other people not to know about you and who you really are inside, and how you, for example, release pressure, or what it is that you actually desire, or what it is that you actually think about some things that you were maybe taught not to explain, or maybe you are in a society where it's unkind or ungraceful of you to express. And that is great, because again, it has very little to do with your class and race. Theoretically, it could have actually a lot to do with them, and that can be pretty awesome.
Now, my final suggestion for this episode is a completely average person. One example would be the game Unknown Armies, where all players start off playing regular people. This, of course, raises an interesting question. Can you play an ordinary person in other games? I don't think it would be a lot of fun playing a regular peasant in a D&D game.
Yeah.
Nah.
Nah.
Especially if you have so much more powerful character surrounding your character.
Exactly, yes.
However, I would argue that it would be very interesting to play an average person for a short duration.
Mm.
For example, maybe a VIP escort mission, where the party need to escort this specific VIP, a wealthy merchant, a seamstress, or a dancer, to another location, and that person has no fighting skills. This could be a very interesting break from the day-to-day regular adventuring. It would force you, as a player, to come up with novel ideas on how to assist the other party members. How to be part of the game, even, if you can't fight or cast spells.
Still puts the focus on the usability and your effectiveness in affecting the physical world in conflict.
Indeed, and I think it's a fun challenge to be had. Maybe not for everyone. I would love playing just a regular person in a super weird world, but hey, why not try it?
Well, I think it's the beginning of a much larger discussion on what is power in a role-playing game. And generally speaking, it's the ability to affect the narrative. And in a game where you are playing a VIP who can order the other characters where to go and what to do because of their station, for example, they have a lot of power, even if they can't lift a sword to save their own life. Because in a way, they can affect what is happening around the table and what is happening in the game so much that they are much stronger than everyone else. And generally speaking, while yes, it is a fun exercise on one-time basics, I think that games that focus on the mundane and give everyone the same amount of power, but that power has nothing to do with how strong you are on the battlefield, are interesting as well. And that leads us to the summary, in which I would like to tell you a bit about the world. We'll be talking about the world a bit later, because Uri and I just played it. It's a game about medical drama, possibly comedy, dramedies, and you just play regular people. You play the doctors, but you also play the nurses, and you can play as the admin, or the intern, or the orderly. And all of them have power, because they can all influence the story. The story is about the drama that happens in the hospital. It's not actually about killing people. It's not about how good you are at making sure that someone leaves the hospital alive. That, of course, is important, but only as a tool for drama. If I am able to make you feel really guilty about something, then I have a lot of power over you. And that is the world, a game where you play regular people, and it's freaking awesome.
Indeed.
It's, of course, only one of several games, a lot of games in the indie market mostly, that focus on this sort of thing. And in these games, it's really important that everyone accept this conceit.
In many improv classes, you focus on taking the next obvious step, doing things which are mundane and banal. And beginners often say, but then there will be no conflict and it will not be interesting. I have to make conflict. I have to create this huge drama and create fights. And then you have to simply remind them that the greatest dramas in life often don't arrive from fights or outer conflicts. Usually, if you spend 1 hour with your family, you will get more drama than if we would spend 4 days in a war zone. Because it's a lot more personal.
Excellent. And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our personal lives, and we both have something to tell you about, and it's the same thing! Yesterday, yep, from the day we're recording this, we played a live stream RPG to support the Make-A-Wish Foundation as part of the Cancer Awareness Month, thanks to Aviv Manoach, our technical dwarf.
Hail Aviv,
our third dwarf, who organized this in 2 weeks, I think, 2 weeks' time, and managed to get Amy and Jess, who are both dear friends of this podcast, and all five of us sat down and played The World, the medical drama. It was a great idea, I mean, considering the concept behind the fundraiser. We managed to raise $205 for the cause. Thank you, everyone. Not everyone that contributed used it in order to make our game more complex, and which was a thing. You could, whenever you put some money in, make us do something. I would like to thank everyone, both those who did force us to reveal backstories and those that did not. You can still, of course, donate. You can go to isil.me/wish, and we'll give a link in the show notes as well.
But since this is a role-playing podcast, I would like to take a moment and focus on the actual role-play aspects of the game. The World is an amazing game. It's a powered by the Apocalypse Games, a hack designed for medical drama gameplay in the styles of shows such as ER or Grey's Anatomy. I think it does what it does really well, in the sense that it creates focus both on the relationship between different characters and on the medical aspect, without taking focus away from one to the other. Your social skills are just as important to gameplay as much as your medical skill, which is very hard to do in role-playing games. And I love the fact how this game, like so few other games, really capture the essence of what it tries to convey to the players.
Yes, it's really good. Again, by Kevin Petker, and we also thank Magpie Games for supporting this stream. And you can watch it in two parts. I will give a link in the show notes. It's in Aviv Manoach's YouTube channel. It's pretty fun. It's like 3.5 hours. That's not too much. That's not a lot. And we are all in costume, so that's fun.
Yay! So we hope you enjoy our episode. Please email us at show@dwarfcast.net with your questions, topic suggestions, comments, and anything else you might want to say.
And as always,
let's rot!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.